This is America Weekend. I am Paul Harris. Thanks so much for listening and for following us on Facebook and on Twitter at America Weekend. Last Monday was the first Monday in October. Traditionally, that is when the Supreme Court starts its new term. And this after a very busy year last year, in which they had rulings on gay marriage and Obamacare and affirmative action and the civil rights law. And now they're into a new session, and they're going to be facing more big decisions. And here to talk about that is Richard Wolf, who's a Supreme Court correspondent for USA Today. Hi, Rich. Welcome back to the show.
Hey, Paul. How are you? Good to be here.
Good. They started off this week already hearing one about election law. Tell me about that.
Well, that's a case having to do with campaign finance law. And basically, there's two ways of looking at campaign finances. One is direct contributions to candidates, and the other is expenditures by individuals independently. They've already totally opened up the side of expenditures. The Citizens United case a few years ago in 2010, you probably remember, said unions and corporations could spend as much as they wanted. This case goes to the other side. Can people give to as many candidates as they want as long as they stick to the base limits? I think they're now $2,600 per primary and per general election to a candidate. And the question here is, well, why can't I give to as many of those as I want? Why do I have to be limited? The current law limits you to about $123,000 every two-year term. So, and the likelihood is, although it's a close call for Chief Justice John Roberts, that they will go along and say, yeah, there's nothing corrupting about giving the small amount, $2,600, to as many people, not so small to a lot of us, Paul, but to as many people if you want, rather than saying, oh, you've given to nine people, you can't give to the tenth. So that's the question.
Does the fear that the wealthiest people in America are essentially going to be buying elections, does that enter into the thinking at the Supreme Court?
Oh, totally. I mean, within about 30 seconds of this oral argument last Tuesday, Justice Elena Kagan, the newest justice appointed by President Obama, started with all of these hypotheticals. The Supreme Court loves hypotheticals. And she started with all these hypotheticals about, okay, you're saying you can only, that if we lift the aggregate limits, you're just allowing people to give the $2,600 base limit to more people, but there's all of these ways that wealthy people can bundle their money, or I should say that legislative leaders and others can bundle the money of wealthy people and funnel it to one candidate or to one key race or another. And so on the one hand, the guy before the Supreme Court, Sean McCutcheon, is saying, well, I only want to give $2,600 each to a couple more people. On the other hand, there is a way that it can be turned into an individual donor like him being able to give $3.6 million altogether, not to one person, but in theory, maybe not so much in practice, the money could be funneled to one candidate or another. So, yes, we're talking about a very, very small number of people who are capable of giving that kind of money. And that's really, for the liberal justices, that's the question. That's what they're trying to stop.
Yeah, unfortunately, I think we're long past the opportunity to just go to publicly financed elections, which would take a lot of the corruption out of our politics. But ever since the court decided in Citizens United that money is speech, I don't think we can ever get that horse back in the barn, can we?
Well, no, probably not. And it was also amusing during the oral argument on Tuesday because a lot of the more conservative justices were saying, well, how can we tell this guy he can't give to more candidates when we've already told him he can give so much more independently, or corporations and unions and PACs can spend so much more independently? In other words, if spending in general on elections independently is okay, why isn't this okay? And you could sort of sense that the Solicitor General for the United States wanted to say, well, whoever said that was okay, it's you guys. You know, I didn't start that. And finally, Kagan, Justice Kagan, said, you know, hey, if you want to work our way back from what we've done on the independent spending side, we're happy to try that.
What else is coming up in this Supreme Court session that you think will be a big case for them?
There's a bunch of big cases this year, and it's surprising because nobody thought that this year after the last two was going to be nearly comparable, but it's shaping up to be at least almost comparable, and there's lots of great cases. Just this coming Tuesday, there's a really interesting case having to do with states' ability to ban affirmative action, to ban racial preferences. It's a case out of Michigan, and it affects about eight states, at least eight states currently, and could affect more if they tried to do the same thing Michigan banned affirmative action. They basically wrote into their constitution, you can't have affirmative action programs, but they wrote it in a very race-neutral way. It sounds real mom and apple pie, and the Supreme Court is likely to uphold it. The term is filled with cases that it seems the more conservative justices are the ones who probably chose to take these cases in their closed conferences. Four justices have to pick cases, have to vote to take a case before it's taken. And the session has a lot of cases where the lower court, the last court to rule, ruled sort of on the liberal side, and the Supreme Court seems to be saying, whoa, 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 wait, let's check that out again. So there's cases on another race case having to do with fair housing. There's a couple of smaller abortion cases, nothing along the lines of Roe v. Wade, but a couple of cases on abortion. There's one on, potentially a couple of good environmental cases having to do with greenhouse gases. And a huge one, one that doesn't have sort of the precedents that could be overturned that a lot of the others do, is on the recess appointments, the ability of the president to make recess appointments when the Senate is, in his mind, out of session, but when the Senate would say, no, 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 we're not out of session, we're dialing in every 3 days, so you can't make these appointments. That's probably the biggest case. It might not be the most interesting to the public, but it's probably the most important case of the term.
Because that is going to affect a lot of labor decisions that were made during or by that recess appointee, right?
Yeah, the National Labor Relations Board got down to a point where they only had two members, that they should have five. And so with two members, they couldn't even conduct business. And the point basically was, and this happens with every administration and every opposition in Congress, so it's not really a partisan issue between Obama and the Senate Republicans, who are not in the majority but have the opportunity to block action. You know, what was happening with a lot of Obama's appointments, and the NLRB became the tipping point, was he would nominate people and they wouldn't confirm them. He would nominate, they wouldn't confirm. He would nominate, they wouldn't confirm. So finally, he waited until the Senate was out of session. He would say out of session. They were gone for about 3 weeks between December and January. And he said, I'm going to appoint these guys by recess appointment. I have this authority that's written into the Constitution. Recess appointment, they're now in, done. And they only get to stay through the two-year session of Congress, but that's pretty good. And the Senate says, well, no, we gavel in the Senate every 3 days, so we're not really in recess. And we could technically take action during those 3 days if we had to. So that's really the dispute. What the lower court, I don't want to complicate things, Paul, but the lower court went way beyond that dispute and ruled on the Senate side and against Obama for a couple of other reasons that are probably too complicated to discuss, but they made the Obama argument almost impossible to win by the way they set it up. And now it looks like the Supreme Court might dial that back a bit, but it's really a coin flip. It's really, no one knows exactly what's going to happen on this case. It's a tough argument for Obama and for any president, because as I said, a Republican president would probably be making the same argument to hold on to his appointment power. But there's really no precedent for this, and there's really no way of knowing which way any of the justices are going to go. It's not a partisan issue.
You know, when people hear about this sort of stuff, I think the opinion of most people is that this is not leadership. This is gamesmanship that's going on Capitol Hill, and the Supreme Court has to get in the middle of it. And so frustrating. I mean, the shutdown is another example of that. I've only got a minute left here, Rich. I'm curious if during this session or after this session, any of these justices might retire. Is there a chance we're going to see a change in the court anytime soon?
Yes, although Justice Ginsburg, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who is 80, would say no. She's had so many interviews over the past few months to shoot down the thought that she might retire soon. But the issue really is for her, and to a much lesser degree for Justice Stephen Breyer, who's in his mid-70s, very healthy, is whenever a president of your party, or even if you're not, you know, registered in that party, a president who you agree with is in office and you don't know who the next president is going to be, is it good to retire under that president? And that's really the question for a couple of the older, one in particular, Justice Ginsburg, who's 80 and who has battled cancer a couple times. Does she want to retire while President Obama is in office. So it doesn't have to be right away. She's got, what, 3.5 years, although you don't want to go right up to the deadline. That's really the one that everyone is watching. But there are four justices who are 70 or older, two on the Republican side, presumably they're, or on the conservative side, I should say, presumably they're waiting for the next president, whoever he or yep. she might be.
Gotcha. Rich Wolf, Supreme Court correspondent for USA Today. Always a pleasure. Thanks for joining me.
Anytime, Paul. Thanks.
I'm Paul Harris. This is America Weekend from the Envision Radio Networks.
America Weekend.